Well, tonight I'm speaking for 5 minutes on the topic, is it science versus God? Do we really have to choose between believing science and believing in God? The short answer is no. I'm a trained scientist and a Christian. I studied physics at university, and it was during that time that I realized that God is real. And also today, many of today's top scientists are really keen Christians. And so, well, you might well ask, how do you hold the two together? Science and God? Well, I've got a better question. How do you manage with just science? If you only ever explain things with atoms and molecules, then actually I'd say you've got blind faith in a whole load of other things. You have blind faith that life is worth living, that there is really any point to it all, any purpose. You have blind faith that love is a real thing and not just chemicals. You have blind faith that justice is a real thing. I mean, put it this way. If a pervert is just atoms and molecules, well, who are we to criticize him? He's just an organic robot doing what comes naturally. You see, science can analyze what someone is doing, but it can never tell you what they should be doing. Science is just a physical tool. And if it's the only thing you believe, then you'll find no solid reasons for love or for meaning or morality or justice. Someone might even say, you may as well live like an animal. Unless you take a deeper look at science, I'd say, realize there's actually loads of evidence for God. And then all of a sudden you've got a founding reason for justice and morality and meaning and love. Well, two quick things to mention now as to reasons why God is out there. Firstly, fine-tuning, and secondly, DNA. Fine-tuning. If you change just one of the fundamental parameters of the universe, then you'll find the cosmos either blows apart or collapses into a pinpoint. For example, gravity. If you change the magnitude of gravitational attraction, if you increase it, then you'll find the universe would never have got as big as it is now. It would have crunched very, very quickly. And there would have been no time for life to develop. Or if gravity is a little bit weaker, then the entire universe would have blown apart within the first few seconds. And there'd been no time for even stars to form, let alone planets and plants and people. Another example, we're just the right distance from the sun. If we were 10% closer to the sun, all the water would be steam very quickly. If we were 10% further away, all the water would become ice. In both circumstances, no chance for life to develop. And you could look at numerous examples like this, of the way in which not just the position of the Earth and the nature of the Earth, but also the nature of the universe and the way the physical laws work together. All of it is finely tuned. And if anything were slightly out of kilter, the whole thing would not work, would not generate life. It's often called the Goldilocks enigma, because the universe is just right for human beings, in the same way as Little Bear's porridge was just right for the interloper who came and nicked it all. The universe is finely tuned for our existence. Professor Paul Davies says this, it seems as though someone has fine-tuned nature's numbers to make the universe, and the impression of design is overwhelming. The second thing you might want to look at is that DNA is really unlikely. Remember, DNA is the blueprint inside every organism, inside every cell. And it's been analyzed so much recently. It is incredibly clever. It's like a computer program for the most beautiful music. It's like a language. And lots of people have been asking, well, if it's a language, who's the speaker, the writer? Who's the composer of this awesome music? Because it couldn't have randomly come together 1 billion years ago. Last century, Thomas Huxley claimed that it was random. He said, look, these chemicals sloshing about in this primordial soup, they could eventually just once in a while come together with this extraordinary chemical compound, DNA. I mean, imagine this. You fill a room with monkeys and you give them each a keyboard to hammer away on. And they're like the random chemicals knocking into each other. And even though they're typing randomly, occasionally a proper word will come out in sequence. So maybe once a century, they'd even make a whole sentence. So given enough time, they could produce the works of Shakespeare. See, he's saying, given enough time, maybe DNA can form randomly. Well, mathematicians got to work on this, and they realized this doesn't add up at all. It would need so much more time, because each time one of these chemicals got together, well, a few minutes later, it would have broken apart or bonded with something else and formed something that would be impossible to form DNA. Mathematicians realized it would just take far more than the age of the Earth or even the universe to somehow conjure up DNA from the primordial ooze by random. And so the atheist, Richard Dawkins, he thought up the idea of a chief monkey. The chief roams around this room of typing monkeys, searching for the next letter in the sequence. And when he finds it, he, you know, takes it off this guy's sheet of paper and puts it onto the pile. And then he looks for the next one in the sequence, the next one, the next one, and builds it up bit by bit. And that makes creating DNA, by chance, a lot quicker. But hang on. Who is this chief monkey, this supervising chemical, who somehow knows the end from the beginning? How does he always know what chemical comes next? It doesn't sound like a chemical at all. It sounds very much like God, through the back door. So please don't think that all the evidence points to you just being an animal. Neither DNA nor the universe could have emerged by chance. All the evidence points to a designer. And that designer has immense power and intelligence. And so it's not science versus God. It's really science showing that God really is there. The question you might ask is, why doesn't he make himself more obvious? Why doesn't he step into history and say hello for once? Well, a challenge about that. If God ever did that, wouldn't you expect God to do stuff that only God can do to prove it? Like miracles? To prove his identity? Well, that's the kind of thing that eyewitnesses said about Jesus. And before you dismiss me as a raving Jesus freak, please bear in mind that Jesus is a historical character. He's not fiction. Nearly every serious historian says that Jesus was definitely real because he's recorded outside of the Bible as well as inside. So the Romans and the Jews spoke about Jesus as a real man. So Jesus appeared on the scene about 2,000 years ago. But how could anyone be sure that he really was God? Well, my time's nearly gone. The short answer is, read the eyewitness accounts for yourself and see. You might have heard of the Gospels in the Bible, the biographies of Jesus' life by four of his followers, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. You can grab a free John's Gospel for yourself tonight. Please check out Jesus for yourself. A little aside here for those of you listening tonight. Lots of people from all kinds of backgrounds have looked at the Bible for themselves and suddenly discovered it makes sense, it's rational, and Jesus leaps off the pages right in your face. And lots of people are becoming Christians, even in the UK, because God's word is living and active. End of aside. Don't just take other people's word for it. In John's Gospel, you'll see that Jesus did stuff that only God can do. With just a word, he made blind people see. He gave crippled men healthy legs instantly. He raised dead people back to life. And so I think Jesus shows that God is real. He ends the entire debate. He ends all doubt. He shows also that God gives a monkeys about us. God cares about people like you and me. In fact, in Jesus, God offers us forgiveness and renewal and comfort and the certain promise that this world will be cleaned up. Well, I wonder if you've got any questions about what I've said.